Shalom, everyone. Today I want to talk to you about one of the most amazing and sometimes forgotten heroines of the Bible, a woman called Rahab, or Rahav in Hebrew. As some of you may know, I have a long romance with the women of the Bible. I've been fascinated by them ever since I discovered Judaism. I felt that although their stories are they don't have so many stories in the Bible, and sometimes they're very short. There's far more to them than meets the eye, and that sort of led me on a journey to reading all the commentaries and exploring all the deeper Kabbalistic ideas about them, and I discovered just a whole world of ideas, and I wrote a whole book about this in Hebrew, just dedicated to the women of the Torah, the five books of Moses, that it's in the beginning of the Bible. And by the way, I'm happy to say that just recently I found the perfect translator for this book, so it's finally on its way to English also. You'll be updated once it'll take some time, but it's coming. So now, other than the women of the Torah, there's also the women of the second two parts of the Bible, the Nevi'im, prophets part, and the Ketuvim, or writings part. And the first of these women, which hopefully will open volume two of my book once I get to it one day, the first woman of these books, the first woman to appear in the book of Joshua, the first book of the prophets, in chapter 2, is this woman, Rahab, Rahav. So we want to go over her story and see all the amazing lessons and ideas we can learn from this story, and also how they apply and how they illuminate things that are happening in our generation, things that we can all really connect to and relate to. So before we go into the story, we need to know this. The story of Rahab is also... It stands as the, we call this the Haftarah, to the weekly portion of Shlach. So the Torah is divided into weekly portions that we read in synagogue every week. And then after we finish each portion, each parasha, we read a Haftarah. The Haftarah is a segment or a chapter from the books of the prophets that somehow thematically connects or rhymes or sort of is in dialogue with what's happening in the portion. So the portion that's read this week outside of the land of Israel, sometimes there's a disparity. So the portion called Shlach Lecha, which talks about Moshe, Moses sending the 12 spies to tour the land of Israel. When we finish that portion, we read the story of Rahab. That is the Haftarah to that portion. So what's the connection? So that's what we want to see. We're going to go over the two stories, compare them, and when we compare the stories, this is really what opens up the story of Rahab really in the most incredible ways. So first, what's going on in the weekly portion of Shlach Lecha? So as I said, this portion is about Moses sending 12 spies to tour the land of Israel. Their job is to gather intelligence, gather intel. They're supposed to tour the land and say if it's conquerable or not. And they're supposed to look at the peoples there and their armies and their soldiers and their if they have fortresses or they don't, and gather all the info, gather all the intelligence, and then that is supposed to influence how we're going to conquer, how the children of Israel, the people of Israel, are going to conquer the land of Canaan and make it the land of Israel. What happens is that they go and they spend 40 days, and when they come back, something really bad happens. 10 out of the 12 spies basically say that the land is unconquerable. And they're basically full of despair, and they're causing despair among all these people, these people that have come out of Egypt, out of bondage, are now 2 years in the desert, and now they arrived finally at the promised land, and then these 10 spies tell them it was all for nothing, it's unconquerable. And that's a very terrible sin, one of the biggest sins of the whole time in the wilderness. But there are two righteous spies, and the two righteous spies, who are Joshua and Caleb, they start saying, no, don't listen to the other 10 spies, they're not telling you the truth. Hashem, God, sent us to this promised land. Obviously, we can conquer it, and we're up to the task. We can do it. Unfortunately, the people don't listen to the two good spies. They listen to the 10 bad spies. And their punishment is that now, instead of right now coming and conquering the land of Israel and starting their new life there, They have to spend 40 years in the wilderness until the whole generation, that or almost all the generation of the people who came out of Egypt will basically pass away, and the new generation, the generation born in the desert, that didn't know Egypt in any way, and maybe a sort of a purer, fresher generation, will come into the land of Israel. Only Joshua and Caleb, the two righteous spies, are outside of this punishment, this curse. They will come into the land, but again, only 40 years or 38 years later. The reason it's 40 years is because they spent 40 days in their sort of spying expedition. So 1 year against each day of this sinning. That's the idea. So that's the story of the portion. Now we finish the portion, we start reading the Haftarah. What happens in the Haftarah? So the Haftarah takes place 38 years later, and now the new generation, led by Joshua, one of the two good spies, is now standing at the gates, basically, of the land of Canaan, and now they're sending yet another spying expedition. So it's two stories that are similar but also very different. This time only two spies are sent. And this one has a happy ending. They go to the city of Jericho and they go to visit a woman called Rahab. Now this woman called Rahab is described in Hebrew as a zona. And now a zona has two meanings in Hebrew. One meaning, the more common meaning, that usually the meaning of this word when we encounter it, it means prostitute. So according to this reading of this word, Rahab is a prostitute who lives in Jericho. According to another interpretation, and that's the more common interpretation, if you see English translations, you will see both. But the Hebrew ones will usually have this interpretation because it's more common, is that she is an innkeeper. She has this, she runs this inn, and everyone knows her, and everyone's sort of coming in and out of this place. How can the same word mean so two things that are so different? Because this root of zona can either come from the word of zniya, which is prostitution or any kind of sexual immorality, and the word lazun is to feed. You can feed someone. As we'll see, we can even see a deep connection between these two interpretations, but we'll go into that later. So she's this woman who's either a prostitute or an innkeeper. Either way, she's a key figure who sort of knows the ins and outs of the city and of the entire land. Now, this woman suddenly does something really amazing. The king has heard that someone has sent two spies. So the king is sending his soldiers, and the soldiers are going everywhere, and they hear that these two spies came to this woman, Rahab. And they come and they knock on the door, and they tell her, you're holding two people, then they're wanted by the government. We want to take them away. And she tells them, you know, they were here, but they ran away. They went in there, that place, in that direction. Go quickly, and maybe you'll catch them. And basically, she saves their lives. She's hiding them at the rooftop and some things that she has, which she can hide them. Then she goes up, and then they have this long conversation. It's night, and they have this conversation. And basically, what she tells them is, and now I'm quoting from the verses, she says, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that your terror is fallen upon us. We're basically all afraid. We've heard about it. We're afraid of you. And that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away because of you. And she continues, for we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea. They heard about the miracle of the Red Sea, although it was 40 years ago, but they heard about it. That he dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites. This is something that happens later on, is that they have this battle with these two kings, and they win, the people of Israel. And she continues, and as soon as we heard, our hearts melted, nor did there remain anyone, not did there remain any more spirit in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on the earth below. And then she tells them, so I'm in your favor. That's why I saved your life, and I want to help you conquer this land, because I really believe that it's sort of your turn in history to rule over this land. But she only asks one thing. She says, I want you to spare me and my family, because I helped you. Please spare me and my parents and my brothers and sisters. And then what happens is that she lets them out through the window. Her house is built on the wall surrounding the city. So her window is overlooking the outside. So she gives them a rope, and they go down the rope through her window. That's how she saves their lives. And then they tell her, we're going to spare your life. What you should do is you should take this red, a line of scarlet thread. In Hebrew, it's called tikvat chut hashani, a line of scarlet thread, and tie it to this very same window and have it sort of hang down, just like the rope that she's using to help them come out. They say it's like an echo. They tell her to take this scarlet line of thread and hang it outside, and then we'll know. And we'll tell our soldiers that they shouldn't touch that house, and that's how you'll be protected. And then they go back to Joshua, and they have the good news. This is the end of chapter 2, the end of the story. They tell them, for the Lord has delivered into our hands all the land, and also the inhabitants of the country have melted away because of us. So basically what they're saying is, this was a wonderful expedition, and we have very, very good news. We spoke to this person, and we basically got a feeling for what's the mood, and the mood is that they're afraid, and we will be able to conquer this land. Now, very interestingly, Rahab here seems to be a kind of personification of the land of Canaan. It's a classical symbol that the land, or the earth, Mother Earth in general, maybe a particular land in this case, is likened to a mother. It's like Mother Nature, Mother Earth, and so on. So she is this woman who's like the embodiment of the land. Why? Because she represents the entire land. Just having this conversation with her is the entire spying expedition. She gives them all they need about whether they can conquer the land or not. And in a way, we can say that the fact that she's betraying her own people and helping this people that are coming from the desert, it's really the fulfillment of a prophecy that was made. It appears in Leviticus 18:28. The prophecy is that the land itself will vomit the nations inhabiting it. This is what it says in Leviticus 18:28. It says that God is warning the Jewish people not to worship idols like the current inhabitants of the land of Israel, because if they will start worshiping idols, they will be vomited out of the land, as the land is now doing to the people inhabiting it right now. So this image of the land itself sort of vomiting the people outside of it, it's a very weird image. But now this is what's happening in the story of Rahab. Rahab is the personification of the entire land. And here she's basically helping this new people come in and conquer the land. And she's sort of pushing outside all the seven nations that are right now in control of this land. Now, let's compare these two stories. So the first thing we see about these two stories is that the first story is about 12 spies, whereas the second story is only about two spies, which interestingly is the number of the two of the good spies within the first story, right? We had 12 spies, only two of which were good and said that the land is conquerable. In this story, it's only two to begin with. And by the way, according to the sages, one of them is Caleb. It's actually the one spy is sort of binds together or connects the two stories, because he was one of the two righteous spies and he is now one of the spies. But this is a midrash. It's not explicitly said in the text. And the other one is Pinchas, by the way, according to this midrash. So that's the first difference. It's two spies versus 12. The second difference is that the first expedition of spies was that they spent 40 days and they went and they sort of covered the entire land. They went the length and breadth of the land. Rashi says that it was a kind of gamma shape. A gamma is the third Greek letter, and it's like two perpendicular lines. So they went from the southeast corner to the southwest corner, and then up to the northwest corner. It was like this kind of gamma shaped. So it's like length and breadth. You'll see in a minute why this is important. And it was 40 days. Whereas this expedition is just one night, not 40 days. And instead of sort of covering the entire land, the entire length and breadth of the land, they go to one city, one house, speak to one person for one conversation. It's a very, very different kind of spying expedition. It's totally different. And another thing is that the second and third differences, right? There were 2 versus 12. It was just one night, not 40 days, and that it was just one place and one conversation with one person, as opposed to trying to cover the entire thing. Another difference is that the first spies were not called spies. They were called tayarim, tourists. Their job was to tour the land. These are called secret spies. That's the term. Miraglim cheresh, secret spies. And then the king says that they come to dig the land. That's the Hebrew term, not necessarily in the English translations, but it says lachfor et haaretz, to dig the land. That is, they're coming to unearth the secrets. So again, it's a very different image. It's not tourists that are sort of wandering the land. It's secret spies, a very secretive thing, and they're trying to unearth secrets. And of course, the final difference is that the result is completely the opposite. The result of the first story was very bad, ended up with a terrible punishment of the entire generation coming out of Egypt, dying in the desert, and only the new generation 40 years later coming in. This has a wonderful conclusion, or a wonderful result, that they have good news and they can conquer the land. That's what happens starting the next chapter. So what comes out of all these differences? The most beautiful thing that comes out is that we can see that the first expedition of spies was more about quantity and about skimming the surface. There were many people, many days, and it was all about going through the length and breadth of the city so they can get like a full picture of the surface picture of what this land is all about. Whereas the second expedition is more about it's qualitative, not quantitative, because it's only 2 people and it's one city, one house, one person, one conversation. You don't need 40 days and seeing a lot of people, because you're trying to get the essence. You're trying to get the quality. You're trying to go, and that's the other difference, it's not surface, it's going depth. You want to go into the depth of what this place is all about. So why is this so important? It's important because we didn't say anything yet about the name of Rahab. I did say that Rahab is like the personification of the land of Israel, which means that the first spies were all about just looking at the surface, at the outside of her, the land, or her Rahab. They didn't know Rahab, and she was a child then. But it doesn't matter. If she symbolizes the land of Israel, it's like that they saw the outside of it. Whereas these people, they saw the inside, they listened to her, they spoke to her, and they got to hear, so to speak, the soul of the land. But the important, beautiful thing here is that the name Rahab has a meaning in Hebrew. It's not just a name. Rahav means broad or breadth, right? Rahav is broad, and it can also, you can change the vowels, and it would be same letters. It would be Rochav, which is breadth. And so why is it so important? It's important because basically the second 2 spies, the good spies in this story, what they discovered is that Rahab, Rahav, which again means breadth, has also depth to her. The first story is just the length and the breadth, it's just the outside. But this story is about discovering the depth of Rahav, or the depth hiding beneath the breadth. Now, this is very, very, a very deep concept to sort of fully understand. And I just want to have a side note here. The side note is that once I gave this class, and someone told me something amazing. She told me, you know, and I didn't know this, but I never made a connection, until a few decades ago, for a few decades during the beginning of the 20th century, there was a slang word, we all know this because it's in the old movies, that called women broads. And it started as a negative word, a word that was derogatory, and it was used for prostitutes. A prostitute was called a broad. And then somehow that word became like a commonplace word, and you could use it without any derogatory weight to it, about any woman, just broads. And of course it fell out of use. We don't use it anymore, but it's very interesting that it seems to be in some deep way connected to the story of Rahab. She was a prostitute, according to one of the interpretations, and she had this name, Rahav, broad. And by the way, the root in English, I think the reason for this word is that women have wider hips, basically. That's basically the thing. But that's also symbolic, because the wider hips of the woman, if you look at ancient art, it was always a symbol of fertility or sexuality. It could be fertility and sexuality together. It could be, as in the case of a prostitute, sexuality divorced from fertility, because you only focus on the sexual aspect of the woman if you see her as a prostitute, and you don't think about the fertility aspect. But all these are somehow connected to this image of breath. So what's so beautiful about this? What's beautiful about this is that her name is misleading. Her name is basically saying she's all about breath. And that's what you would think when you see a woman who's a simple woman who could be a prostitute, or she could be an innkeeper. And an innkeeper is also not the, you know, highest levels of society, or the highest, how do you call this? It's not a high class, right? It's a lower class woman. So, but her name is misleading, because there is depth to her. So what happened is that the first 12 or 10 out of the 12 spies, when they saw the land of Israel, they only saw the outside of it. They saw the rochav, breadth aspect of it. That's why they thought it was inconquerable, because on the outside, it seemed that the people were too powerful, too strong, they seemed like giants, and there's no chance. And the two good spies would say, no, but look on the inside. This land belongs to us. This land is where we're supposed to be going. It's a promise made by God. So don't look at the outside of things. You should look at the inside of things. But these two spies it's all about quality, not quantity, and depth versus breadth. They come in, they meet this woman, and they listen to her. And they see, they recognize that she is really reflecting the mood of the entire people, or the mood of the land, we can say. Now, what's really amazing about this is that the name Rahav is alluded to in the weekly portion of Shlach Lecha. When the description appears of where their spies are going, I told you they're coming from the southeast corner to the southwest, and they're going all the way up to the northwest. They have this shape. So the corner of this shape, the place at the very center, is called Rehov. And Rehov is the same letters as Rahav, identical. So there's something about this Rehov place, which has no surface connection to the woman Rahav, but is clearly sort of rhyming with her name in the Haftarah. It seems to suggest that when they're going from breadth to length, it's all about Rehov or Rochav. Again, width or breadth or the outside. So there's something very beautiful here that we have this woman who you could easily misjudge, and you can say that she is something very low and low class and all this. And her name would seem to suggest the same thing. By the way, there's one of the interpretations of the sages is they say is that it's a very cryptic line they're saying Rahav zinta bishma. Rahav, Rahab, used her name for prostitution. Her name somehow helped or enabled her prostitution. And this, the best way to understand this is that the name made her seem less than what she really was, or it helped her become like an object for men's desire, and not a subject, not someone with inner depth. And this is, by the way, we can also see the connection between innkeeper, or a woman who sells mezonot, sells food, and a prostitute. What is the connection? The literal meaning of zona, according to the interpretation that it's an innkeeper, is that she's feeding someone. She feeds people. She sells them food. So you can think about it in this way. A man is supposed to treat a woman like a subject. And that means that traditionally he's supposed to provide for her. He's supposed to take care of her. He's supposed to make sure she has everything. He's supposed to be an influencer, a mashpia, a giver. And he needs to give her and see that she's taken care of. And she all her needs are taken care of. But what the prostitute does, and also the woman who sells food, it's the same thing here, is that she's saying, you don't have to be a man, you can be a child. And I will bestow upon you your fantasies. I will feed into your fantasies. I will give you what you want. This is basically what people get, men get, out of watching porn. What they get out of watching porn, it is instead of having a real woman that they need to show an interest in her and have a real relationship with her and give her what she needs, what she wants, and grow up basically in order to be with her, then people watch porn because porn has this fantasy woman who's just telling you, relax and I will do everything for you, and I will fulfill your fantasies and your dreams about women, which is basically I will be your object. So the idea that she is feeding these fantasies. So the two interpretations really come together. And that's one of the explanations, by the way, is that there's no contradiction. It's the same thing. And one of the names for a prostitute was an innkeeper. It's like the same. It was the same thing basically. She had a host. She had a house. People would be hosted in that house, but it would really be a brothel. So this is the best way to understand this cryptic saying by the sages that she that Rahab used her name for prostitution, because the name that means broad was like a prostitute kind of name, and it was all about, I don't have any depth to me, I'm not a subject, I'm your object, and I will fulfill your fantasies. You don't have to listen to me, you don't have to talk to me, I will just be there for what you for your own male fantasies. Now, what happens in this story is that these two people come and they have a long conversation with her. They're not there. They're there on a mission. They're not there, God forbid, to use her for these purposes. They're there to listen to her. And they have this heartfelt conversation. And she tells them about herself and about her family and about the people and about how she heard about them coming out of Egypt, and she believes in them and all this. And basically they discover the depth within her. And this is why this story is a rectification of the first story. The first story was coming to the land of Israel, which is again likened to a woman, and seeing only the outside of her. And then you say, well, she's not for us. We're just made a tour, a little tour, and we're coming back. But we're not staying. We're not marrying this land, basically. That's what the 10 spies said. We're not marrying. We're touring this land. We're not marrying this land. But these two spies are coming in, and it's a qualitative kind of conversation that they're having, and they're listening. And basically what's going with her is also amazing, because she's saying, I used to feel part of these seven nations that are in control of this land right now. But I realized in a way that I believe in you more than I believe in these seven nations. And in a way, what she's saying is the following. She's saying, you know, these seven peoples here, they keep saying how much they're nature worshippers, how much they love the goddess of nature, the Mother Earth. And they love womanhood, they love femininity, they love nature. But really, they're disrespectful to me. And all that's happened to me over the years that I've spent here is that I became a prostitute for all these generals and these important people who come over. But I see you, these people, these escaped slaves that are coming out of the desert, and you have these laws of sexual morality, all these boundaries, all this modesty, all this rules about what you do, what you can and you can't do. And I used to think lowly of you, but I think highly of you now, because I realize that you're going to respect me and sanctify me and elevate me more than these people do. Again, she's talking both as an individual and as a personification of the land. These people are using the land and women as sexual objects for their kind of pagan rituals. But you are different. You worship a transcendent invisible God, which basically means you're looking at the soul that's hiding within the body. You're looking for depth. And you're going to see me as a subject, not as an object. And that's why I believe in you. And it's a little bit like a woman leaving her abusive boyfriend, whom originally she thought was very cool. She thought he was the cool guy, and he made her feel like a queen. And but then he's a womanizer. He only looks at her as an object. And then this other guy who she thought was the nerd, the one who she didn't look at, now growing up and having suffered all kinds of experiences with that cool, who she thought was the cool guy, she's realizing that nerd is a much better boyfriend, husband, and he would really take care of me. And now I'm realizing that because she is also becoming deeper in her insight. And according to the stories, by the way, she's 50 at this point, and she was 10. It says that when the people of Israel came out of Egypt, she was 10, 40 years previously. And then that's when she started becoming a prostitute, when she was 10. And she spent 40 years as a prostitute. And now she's sort of coming to her senses. And she's basically saying, I don't want to be this object anymore. I don't want to be an object for this society that says, that claims that she's all about adoration for femininity and nature and desire and the body, and it's objectifying me. And these people that are coming, these very religious people that are coming from the desert with all their laws and all their inhibitions and prohibitions, they're really, because of those prohibitions, they're connected to the soul and to who I really am, and they would see me for who I really am. And so this is the depth of the story. The story also is, you can look at it from the outside, also from the inside. So the story is all about them looking at her depth, herself realizing she has, or coming to the realization she has depth, and then they come together, and this meeting is really what helps the entire continuation of the story, which is the people of Israel coming to their own, to their promised land. Now, another thing to add, if you look at the portion of Shlach Lecha, it starts with this story about the spies. It ends with the mitzvah of the tzitzit, the fringes, the pale blue thread that needs to be on the fringes of the clothing. And when you get to that commandment, then Hashem says, if you look at it, then you should remember, you shall not wonder after your hearts and after your eyes, after which you are going astray. That sums up the portion. The portion started with going astray by wondering after the hearts and the eyes, which only see the outside, and then going deeper and seeing the depth. In a way, the 40 years spent in the desert also have the people of Israel also become more inward looking and looking at the inside. Now, there's a final thing that we need to know about this story, and that's really the most beautiful, the most amazing part of the story, is that although Rahab herself is looking for someone to see her inside, to see her soul, she herself does not believe that she personally can be redeemed. And we see this, she wants to be spared. She says, please make sure that me and my family are spared. But she doesn't think that she can be redeemed. How do I know this? Because if you look at the verse that she says, for the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on the earth below. This verse is echoing a verse that was said before by Moses, which is almost identical, but there are two differences. The first difference is that the original verse said by Moses was, the Lord your God is the God in heaven above and on the earth below. Whereas Rahab says, the Lord your God is God, or is a God in heaven above and on the earth below. So she is not fully convinced, she's convinced that this is a real God, that these Hebrews have a real God, because he made all these miracles. But she doesn't yet believe that he is the one and only God that's above all the idols that she still, apparently, still worships. So she thinks that he is a God, but not the God. But the biggest difference, the bigger difference, is that she takes away, she omits two words at the end of the original verse. The original verse ended with God is in heaven above and on the earth below, and then the two Hebrew words, Ein Od, came. Ein Od means there is no other. So she didn't say these words. So again, she still thinks there are some more gods. But how do I learn from this that she has given up on herself? So this is where the sages come in. And they say that when she left out the two words, there is no other, Ein Od, when she left it out, she didn't only mean there are other gods. She meant that God controls the heavens and controls the earth. That's what she said. He is God in heaven above and on the earth below. But there's one place he doesn't have control over, the abyss. This is what they say. They say he rules heaven. I grant you that, says Rahab to the two spies. He rules heaven, he rules the earth, but he doesn't rule the abyss. No one rules the abyss. And if you listen to this verse and you see the context of this woman who spent 40 years as a prostitute, and you realize that she's basically saying, I'm in the abyss. The abyss is also, by the way, the belly of the earth. The belly of the earth is the image of a womb. We said that the land is like a woman. It's like Mother Nature, or she's the personification of the land. It's like a big womb, and the womb is the abyss. And she feels, I've fallen to this abyss. I'm in this abyss. I will not have any children anymore. I will not be able to properly marry. I'm lost. I want you to spare me and my family, and I want you to come in, and I will help you. But I am in the abyss, and even your God cannot come in to the dark abyss where I am and save me and redeem me. I'm beyond saving. That's basically what she's saying. And how do they reply? They tell her, you should take this scarlet line of thread. And the Hebrew word, the wording for this, a very strange wording, it doesn't say only chut hasheni, a thread of scarlet. It says, this is why the word line appears. It says tikvat chut hasheni. And tikva means line, but it also means hope. It's like a lifeline. She saved their lives using this rope. And now they're throwing her a lifeline. And this scarlet thread that they're giving her and telling her, tie this to the window, it's like a lifeline to this abyss. And they're saying to her, no, our God is not only in heaven and in earth, he's also in the abyss, Ein Od. And he's not just a God, he's the God. And if he's the God of everything, and there are no other gods, it's not like Gnosticism, where you have a good God and a bad God, and then the good God is in charge of the good things that happen to you, and the bad God is in charge of the bad things that happen to you. And then you would say, well, the good God can't save me from the bad God, right? It's like the people that think of God and Satan as sort of equal, having equal power. No, it's not the way it is. There's only one God, which means everyone, no one is beyond saving. There's no such thing. Everyone can be saved, including even you. And although you may feel that you're at the bottom of life, at the bottom of the abyss, you can be saved. And indeed, the tradition in Judaism is that she converted to Judaism and she became the wife of Joshua. Joshua, who's now the leader, the king, who sent the two spies, she marries him. And not only that, but out of their descendants come some of the greatest prophets and prophetesses of the Jewish people, most notably Jeremiah the prophet, writer of the book of Jeremiah, and Huldah the prophetess, another prophetess that appears later on. So we see here that the story of Rahab is really, really unbelievable. She is this woman who seems to be, at a place in life where it's really hopeless. And she makes this amazing act that she defies the kingdom of where she lives, and she endangers her own life. She sends the soldiers of the king away, and she hides these two spies, and she helps them. And through this process, she discovers her own depth, and then they help her discover an even deeper depth than what she thought she had, that she can actually be fully saved and redeemed and converted and be the mother of prophets and prophetesses. So this is our class for this time. If you like this, please leave a like, subscribe to the channel, leave a comment, and share this video, and I will see you in the next video. This video was made possible through the kind support of my sponsors over at Patreon. Patreon is a great way to help independent creators like myself produce original content. If you'd like to get more English language videos from me, please consider becoming a supporter via Patreon. You can find the link in the description below. Thank you very much.